guys, welcome to episode 6 of the iHeart Running podcast. What would you do if you were a college student in your 20s working at a shoe store and Scott Jurek walks in right after winning Western States and then asks you to run with him? Well, that's what happened to Chrissy Mayle. One thing led to another, and in an era when not too many women were running trail races, let alone winning them, Chrissy did just that. 22 years later, and she's making a bigger impact than ever. I am so excited about this episode because Chrissy Mayle is someone who has played such a huge part in my own running journey. I truly believe in serendipity and how everything happens for a reason. Just as Scott Jurek showed up in Chrissy's life, Chrissy showed up in mine. From new runner to injured runner to a trail runner and ultra marathoner. And it all happened because I was dealing with a frustrating ankle injury in 2018. The last thing one would think would help is to twist one's ankle in a crazy technical trail. But that's exactly what I did in the dark. Not so much the ankle twisting part, but I found a new community in the trails. As I recovered from my injury and worked hard towards gaining back my fitness, I decided to try something new and join the Kentech Trail Clinic. I was lucky to have had a few friends join me, and this was the beginning of something very special. I immediately fell in love with the trails, especially night running. In this episode, we'll discuss what happened next and how following your heart could lead to some amazing things. I hope you enjoy this episode. So welcome to my podcast. I'm so excited to have you. The reason I asked for you to come join me on my podcast is I heard that the second edition of your book is coming out, Running Your First Ultra. And that's how I got into ultra running in 2018. So I'm just going to tell my listeners about how we met.
Okay. Sounds great.
I remember the exact date I met you because it was actually my 38th birthday.
And I had that's right. Yeah, you were celebrating.
Yes. I just joined a trail running clinic. So what happened to me, I'm not sure if all my listeners know, but I was injured as a new runner. I started running in 2015 and then I got injured. I was mostly a road runner back then. And then for some reason I thought, oh, maybe I will try the trails. And for some people, they think, oh, why would you want to twist your ankle on a trail? But I thought it's slower, it's more stuff to focus on than speed, you know, company and, you know, the sites around you. So I heard about the Kentech Trail Clinic and I met Ryan and Kristen and they led the North Van Trail Clinic. And they said to me, have you ever thought about running an ultra marathon? And I said, no way. And it's like, they're like, Chuckanut's happening in March. And we happened to have the race director and she's coming up on November 7th. And I said to them, that's my birthday.
This is all meant to be.
Well, I wasn't sure about spending my birthday, you know, inside the store, but they tried to bribe me of some cake. And I thought, okay, you know, I really love cake. So, and I had no idea what, Chuckanut even was. I know some friends ran it earlier because Chuckanut is in Washington where you're from. And it's not too far away for us. So I thought, okay, maybe I'll go, and, you know, check out the talk. And my friend said, what? Chrissy Mayle is coming? You have to go. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, she is an amazing ultra marathoner and you cannot miss this. So I have to credit my friend Mike, and he actually came along that night because he was dying to meet you. And he convinced me to show up on my birthday, November 7th, I was wondering. And there you were, and you were signing your book and autographing it. So you gave a talk on ultra running. I not only did I buy your book that day, which you autographed me and I still have on my nightstand. I signed up for Chuckanut and I trained for Chuckanut, which was my first ultra with your book. So honestly, it was life changing for me. It's one of the most, I guess, instrumental moments in my life for all parts of my running, whether it's trail running, road running, just my running life, because before that date, I never even knew about an ultra, how to run an ultra, how to train for any kind of race. I used to just run. And when I heard your next edition was coming out, I knew I had to talk to you. So thank you so much for coming.
I wish we could do another Kentech meetup. That would be fun.
I think it would be amazing. If you ever do come back, please let me know. I would love to attend. And I must say, Kentech was amazing that year. They got me already. Your book was amazing. Like I said, I completed Chuckanut in 2019 in March, and which I'm very fortunate about because right after, as you know, there hasn't been any races. So that's another reason I'm really excited to have you here, because I know that this is the first time in 2 years where you've been able to hold a live race, Chuck and I, which you're the race director of. So I do want to tell our listeners about that. So how did this all come about? How did you go? So for all my listeners, Chrissy Mail, she is a very accomplished ultra marathoner. She's won several races that she's done over 100, I believe, ultra marathons. And you are so well known as a veteran and legend in the ultra running world. You've won Western States,
I have not won
UTMB.
Western
No?
States. That
Oh,
is
sorry,
from the
second.
no, I was second place there.
Sorry, my apologies. That's
No
still
worries.
amazing. Well, you still have a you still can. So you came in second female, which is amazing. And for I would like you to tell our listeners about Western States in this podcast, because that's an amazing accomplishment. Your grand slam. You did win first female for HIIT 100 in Hawaii, which I heard was one of the hardest ultra marathons out there. Not many people finish that. And you're the race director of Chuckanut, which you won in your first year of ultra marathoning. So with that being said, can you tell our listeners about how you became a runner? I know you were an 800 meter runner in college. How do you
Oh,
go
you
from that?
remember. Yeah.
I do. I know so many. I remember everything about you because I find that you're so inspiring. Because back then, about tw is it 22 years ago when you first did your ultra in 2000?
2000 was my first ultra at the Chuckanut 50K. And like you, I was lucky enough to fall into a community that just kind of sucked me up and along and showed me the ropes. And there weren't books on how to train for ultras back then. So it was really dependent for myself. I really thrived having that community around me. And Seattle became like a hot spot for ultra running back way back in those days. Scott McCoubrey opened the Seattle Running Company, a store down there, and it just became this hub of people. Scott Jurek came and worked for him. He had just won his first Western States. Scott went on to win seven
Oh,
Western
another
States.
legend.
And I was a junior in college and wanted my, footwear job back after coming home from Ecuador. I'd studied abroad for 6 months and came home to find that the store I'd been working for was now under new ownership. And this new ownership, like, talk about a pivotal life moment, is like being around those people and specifically men at the time. There weren't as many women in the ultra running in our immediate community. There are amazing women all over the country, but like there was like sporadically here and there and there, and then we would connect at events where now you can have full communities. I get to be on the Trail Sisters podcast this evening when it's all women. And like that is so cool to me that 20 plus years later that there's these hubs of women that are as strong of running communities as I experienced coming up in the Seattle era. So yeah, influenced by my surroundings and the people, and quickly going from looking at mountains and thinking they were beautiful to looking at them and thinking, how do I get there? Like, how do my legs carry me there? And that connection just being a really life-sustaining piece, that running is so fulfilling that way. That, and I know it's not for everybody. Like, there's people that will look at mountains and not want to go to them, or people that look at a road marathon and don't want to pound the pavement. And I totally understand it's not for everybody. And when I'm asked what inspires me, it's passion. And I think the trail running community has a lot of passion, and you can also find it in other venues as well. So I just really encourage people to find what gets them as excited as I get about trail running for their life.
And obviously, it became such a huge part of your life. You've been doing it for so long. And I loved your story about how you started. You were quite young back then, and you met Scott Jurek. Did you even know who he was when you were working at the running store?
I didn't. And he had just won his first Western State. So he was just coming onto the scene. So it wasn't, and the scene, that's like, this is dating us, but that's before social media. That's
Oh,
like
yeah,
the
so
early,
true.
yeah, it's just the early days of email, let alone internet and YouTube, and like all of that came up after like well into these then careers that we ended up establishing. Ultra running was something you did in addition to your job. Sponsored ultra running was product. You got free shoes and shirt and like a running kit, not full salaries. And to say you were a professional ultra runner, that language didn't exist in 2000. So a lot has changed in what feels like a short amount of time, but when you look at it in the term of decades, it's been a couple.
That is such a good point. I didn't think of that. For some reason, it seems like the internet has been around forever now. And you don't think, okay, like how do you meet other runners? Like if it wasn't for the fact that you were working at the running store, would your life may not have gone down the same path. That's so
It's so
interesting.
true. Yeah, like you said, those pivotal points of when you make contact and have things evolve. A really good comparison story is I got to travel to China in 2015 for a running event with one of my footwear sponsors at the time. And trail running was so new in China at that time. Like it had been around, but it just felt like those early days when it was more like who you knew and if somebody had pulled you into the sport. And then I got to go back in 2018 to run the Galigong 165 kilometer. And in 3 years, the sport had grown what it took 20 years in the United States. And I really think that has a lot to do with the internet. Like searching videos, seeing videos of like Killian and all these Courtney DeWalter, like all these stars that have come up in our sport and the gear that goes along with it. And, Ginger Runner doing gear reviews and, people all over the world doing these things. Like those 3 years, the evolution of specifically trail and ultra running and the questions I got asked in 2015 versus the experiences people were having in 2018, it was like so much faster than it took to see the sport evolve that much from 2000 to 2020, if you will.
Oh wow, that's so true. And what I guess when you were young, I know you started as a cross country and track athlete. Did you ever envision yourself as the person you are today, who's a coach, an ultra marathoner, an author of a book? Like you.
No, I mean, it wasn't a thing. Like when I was a little girl running track and cross country, like professional ultra runners didn't exist. There were people that ran ultras. I didn't know them, but there it wasn't even a reality point in my world. So definitely a life of like following my heart as opposed to setting a path, setting an end goal. I wouldn't say that's what I've done, but I've at every twist and turn followed my heart. And holy cow, what an amazing! I'm working with 40 athletes now, a full coaching calendar and race directing event for 20 years now. I counted it out, and I remember taking the event over at 24 years old, and thinking, man, if I do this for 20 years, I'll be 44, and if I do it for 25, I'll be almost 50. And here I am, 44 years old this year, and putting on race directing for the 20th time. Like you noted, we haven't been able to put on the in-person event for 2 years now due to the pandemic. So the race is in its 28th running, but Doug McKeever directed for 10 years, and then I've directed for 20 years, but only got to put it on 18 times.
That's still so impressive. I'm just amazed at your journey. And I love how you emphasize that you followed your heart and your passion. And as you know, I call this the I Heart Running podcast because for me, running is about the heart. And you do use your legs and your body, but it's all about following your passion. And I love how your entire career and life has been about following your passion. It's just amazing.
Well, the heart is such a great joiner, right? Like between the head and the physical. So the mental and the physical like kind of comes together in that central like physical location, the power that the heart and the lungs provide. Like there's a lot of great symbolism there.
So how did I remember you led your talk at Kentech about how you became the race director of Chuckanut. Can you tell us about that first ultra marathon and how that led to you becoming the race director 10 years later? Or more than 10 years.
I just, 15. Yeah. So I ran it for the first time in 2000. Doug McKeever and Richard West had been putting it on for 7 or 8 years at that point. And then 2002 was their 10th year, and they called it good after that. And by the fall of 2002, nobody had taken on the race director reins. And I just could not see letting the event go, because like the first event, like first love. And so my husband at the time and I took on the event for 2003. And then I've kept it going for the 20 years since.
Wow. And I must say, if I wish I could run it again this year. It was an amazing experience. I think it's a good race for all kinds of runners. First time ultramarathoners, experienced runners. It's a very fun course. I had such a good time, even with the snow that year. In March, we had it. That was a very interesting. I trained through 2018 and 2019, as you remember, and that year was all snow and ice, and it was my first time running in that kind of weather. And I felt so confident going in, though, and I still feel accomplished. I still tell people about it to this day. It's such an accomplishment. So I don't know how it was for you your first time. I didn't win the race, obviously, but I won in my heart, because I finished something that I never fathomed that I could do. So thank you for your book and for an amazing race. And is the race the same this year in terms of the amount of people running it? Of course, have you guys have to do any make any changes?
It'll be about the same. We registered 600 runners, and we're coming up against our refund date. So people that aren't able to participate that registered, we can give a refund and then pull people off the wait list. And so that date is February 16th. So we'll see a little bit of turnover at that point for people that have to not be able to join us this year. And so our hope was to start in the 500s, like ideally 600, but there's just a natural attrition rate for any race. And then I think especially this time of year when people are coming through the winter, and we've had a challenging start this year. Lots of people have the result or the reasons that I'm getting, you know, having to do with, you know, childcare being really challenging, or being able to get in training due to work and stay at home practices and stuff. So things have definitely added even another layer of challenge for people to be able to get their training in and join us this year. So it'll be interesting to see what we can create at the starting line. We are still like kind of waiting on the health department to define whether we're having wave start or mass start, and the real specifics of how we put on an in-person event according to the current times. So where the community is at that point. So a few more obstacles added, like race directing. There's some pieces that become kind of plug and play, and you know the porta potty contact, you know the garbage and the tents, but then there's all these layers of different dynamics. One fun thing that we're adding this year is it's an experiment. We've been contacted by a person that's creating live stream, so we'll have video footage streaming live at 6 different spots along the course. So if that all comes together, I'm like super stoked. So you won't be able to make it down, but you might be able to watch some of the footage, and having run the race, you'll know those spots, and it'll probably look really different because, well, who knows? Weather is always a hands up in the air. Who knows what's going to happen? But if it's like our typical kind of wet or overcast day, the green, the moss, the ferns, the tall trees, not covered in snow, will have a different vibe than what you experienced in 2019.
Yeah, I think a lot of my listeners will actually understand the kind of weather, since I live not too far away from there in Canada, and you know, the West Coast weather can be very interesting, but it's always gorgeous. That's what I love about trail running. It could be raining, it could be snowing, but it's just the way that the green hit, and if it's a sunny day, it just hits the trails in such a gorgeous way. Can you tell listeners about Chuckanut? Not everyone knows. I know some of my listeners are road runners, some are beginner trail runners, and some are accomplished. But for anyone who hasn't run Chuckanut, can you tell us about the race a little bit?
Sure. The course takes place, and it's fun because it starts close to an urban area. It's in Fairhaven Park, where we gather everybody. And then the inner urban is a gravel, sometimes paved. Over the years, like sections have become paved. It used to be all gravel, but this 6 mile long trail that parallels the Chuckanut Drive, and it's relatively flat. There's a couple dips along the way that are probably more noticeable on the way back than they are on the way out.
I
And
remember
then, yeah, people are like, "Oh, the first six was so easy. Why is the last six so hard?" So it's a lollipop loop, and the stick is those 6 miles along the inner urban. And then the middle section, we call it the middle 18, is a 30K loop, including trails such as Fragrance Lake Trail. There's a section on Cleeder Road. The Big Ridge Loop is about 7 miles and has Lost Lake, which is kind of the muddy section, and some good climbs, ending in the Chin Scraper climb that takes you back to the highest point on the course of Cyrus Overlook. And then it's a 3 mile downhill, and then the 6 miles flat back. So the people might think that the challenge comes in the middle 30K. Also, a lot of the beauty comes in the middle 30K. And personally, like training people for the event over many years, coaching people specifically, I feel like it's that 3 mile descent and the 6 miles flat back that can really make or break the way the event feels for you. Because if you come flying off those 3 miles feeling amazing and skip the last aid station, which has happened to a lot of people, they think, "Oh, I only," air quotes, "have 6 miles to go." They'll get 2 miles past the aid station, and those little dips and dives along the inner urban can get your attention. And 6 miles, maybe you did in 50 minutes to an hour 10 on the way out, could turn into an hour and a half if you're walking sections that you could be running. So fueling and really staying aware of leg turnover and setting like pace goals on those last 6 miles for the mental aspect to stay motivated are really key pieces to, I think, like feeling successful on the Chuckanut 50K. Whatever time you run is awesome. How you feel is the big deal. And so being able to tick off those last 6 miles at whatever pace is motivating for you really changes how you cross the finish line, I think.
So true, because like I said, I came from the road running world. You can get away with running a half marathon or for 4 hours without much feeling, as you know. And when I trained for my first ultra, Chuckanut, all my accomplished ultra runner friends are telling me, number one, it's not about running fast, it's about fueling properly. If you don't feel, you will know. And it's the first time in my life I realized running wasn't just about running as fast as you could. It's a whole spectrum of things that you need to learn, how to recover properly, how to train for time on feet. And that was what the takeaway from your book that I got the most was training for time on feet versus pace. And that's a big transition for a road runner like me. I know in a trail running road it might be pretty common, but a 50K on the road may take someone, because they could possibly run it under 4 hours. 50K on a mountain with, I can't remember the elevation of Chuckanut. Can you tell our listeners what the elevation climb was in feet and kilometers, you know?
Yeah, so the race is 50 kilometers long, and the bulk of the elevation comes in that middle 18, and it's just shy of 5,000 feet. But then you make up that difference on the inner urban with those dips and dives. So we say it's a 50K with 5,000 feet, or 31 miles with 5,000 feet. I don't know the meter translation to what it is to how many meters. I guess about 1,800 meters, somewhere in there.
It's okay. But I think the thing is, everything is concentrated in the middle. So how running works is, in if it was spread out over the entire 50K, it probably wouldn't have been such a climb. And but knowing that it's all in the middle 30K, I think actually when the race got me was the last, like you said, the interurban, the last, as a road runner, I thought it'd be a breeze. I thought I'll be running to the finish line, it'll be flat and I'll be flying. And all of a sudden I realized this is why I trained so hard for the last 4 months. Not to keep
Yeah.
on going. It
Yeah,
was
the
interesting.
yeah. Well, and there where the mental really comes into play of being able to finish. Yeah.
Yes, and I did finish. I know your finish was quite, when you won Chuckanut, I think you managed to do it in just about 5 hours. Is that correct?
The first time, And then I ran it again in 2002 and ran it just under five. It was like 440 something. Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. I need to come back and do it again.
Yeah, totally.
I did mine in about 7 hours, which I was really proud about.
Definitely.
And I thought, I never imagined, I know not everyone feels the same about running that distance. And I love long distance running, as I'm sure you do too. And some people aren't into big distances. But I thought, I cannot imagine running for 7 hours. That's a long time on your feet. And yet it's possible. And also you have shown with your 100 milers that were 165 miler is your longest distance, I believe. Is that correct?
Yeah, on the Tahoe Rim Trail. Yep.
I remember that. And I'm like, wow. And you only slept for a few hours?
It was either 20 or 40 minutes. I can't remember.
That's amazing. You've slept for less than that, an hour. And how long was the rate? How long did it take you to run 165 miles?
It was 47 hours and 29 minutes. I was trying to get under the previous record was 49:11, and I wanted to be under 48. So we kind of definitely cruised in. I don't, you know, it was one of those experiences where I don't know where that leg speed came from in the last 5 or 6 miles. It was mostly downhill, which also helped, of course, but I'm pretty sure we were running under 6 minute pace at the end of 165, which is because I don't run under 6 minute pace on a like 5 mile run. So that's where that mind body connection and also kind of superseding what we might mentally think is possible. If we just dig into our heart and see what happens. That was one of those experiences.
Wow. That's why I think ultra marathoning is so intriguing to me. Because like every time you think you cannot do something amazing, it's been shown by people like you and Scott and any other ultra marathoner that it's not just about the body, it's about the mind, and you can accomplish a lot more than you think you can. And
by you too, you just said that you did it for yourself on your first ultra, to like go beyond what you thought was possible time to spend running to finish a distance you maybe didn't even know for sure. Like whatever realm it's happening in, people have the ability to push or to prove that they can do more than they think they can.
It's given me so much confidence as a runner, and I know that you're coming with your second edition of your book. Can you tell listeners about what the difference is? Do I need to get the second edition too? I know it's coming out. Is it coming out any minute now or any?
Right, it was supposed to be out January 11th, but with a lot of like a lot of commodities, it got stuck on a boat out in the Atlantic. Yeah. And so currently the public or the release date is March 8th. So just a couple weeks before, or not even 2 weeks.
Just before.
Yeah, I know. I was like, oh geez, one more thing to throw into March, but here we go. It's supposed to release March 8th. I have the advanced copy sitting on my desk, and it's so cool to just see the difference of it compared to the first edition. The main thing is the breadth of it. It is now 100 pages more because we added blank training logs to the training plans. So every page that has a training plan is now mirrored by a blank training log page for the runner to fill in. So it makes it way more interactive, which is what I really wanted for the book. Like having it be paperback and that kind of funky square shape makes it more of a manual than a book. I want people to be able to dive in and dive out of it rather than reading it cover to cover. So we changed the table of contents to be more like just really detailed. So whatever you're looking for, you can just look into the table of contents and then find the page that you need to go to. Super fun process for me was being able to like update every word. Like I don't even know how many times I read through and updated and changed and edited pages and the language and stuff. A fun one was that the gear, like just noting how gear has changed in 6 years, like what we carry now and what's available to us. I also added a chapter about longevity, which being 44, going into my third decade of doing this, seems very relevant. Yeah. And some worksheets that are included. So people like that pertain to longevity, pertain to race goals, race reflection after those are all included. And the one thing that I'm like super stoked on is the additional voices that I added to the book. I reached out to it's about 20 people, maybe 25, pillars, I think I see as pillars in our sport, and asked for whatever quote they would want to include. So that was the only prompt. I didn't say they had to write about anything specific, and they got to send anywhere from two to six sentences is where we kind of capped it at, of what they would want to say to a first time ultra runner. And it was so fun getting those quotes back and then figuring out where to integrate them into the text to bring more life to the pages. So yeah, some really fun ads, I'm super excited to get to share it with everybody. So I hope that is intriguing enough to you that you would want to buy the second edition.
I am very intrigued. I loved your first edition, and I'm 42 this year, so I'm very close in age to you. So that longevity section. Oh, thank you. It'd be November. But I'm really intrigued about how to stay strong as a runner. It's a lifetime passion, like you mentioned earlier. And I'm sure running in your 40s is very different than running in your 20s. Have you noticed that in your running career?
I've been paying close attention to the differences going into a third decade and how the first and second were different, and now with the third. And I'm having a very female experience. So how my hormones are changing as well, and how that affects both my training and my recovery. So just really tuning into what I can do to work with my biochemistry, and like, how do I fuel? Like, what I ate in my 20s is very different from now, where I tell the joking story, but it was true, is I would go to a grocery store and pick up an artisan loaf of bread and then pay for the bag, because I'd walk around and eat the whole loaf while I was grocery shopping. That is not something that would fuel me now. That would leave me feeling very like fluttery and light, and I need more dense calories. And the change in my fueling, both on and off, or in and out of training, however you want to put it, and strength work is another one I would say it's always been a constant for me, thankfully. The more I read and learn how important it is for women specifically, but athletes and endurance athletes in general, to move weight around and be really like conscious of form and doing it well, but also not just like light weights, high reps, but being intentional about like stressing the body in that weightlifting way to be able to maintain muscle mass and muscle growth. And you have to fuel that as well to keep this, this body healthy and being able to do these longer distances.
Yeah, I remember in your first edition, and this is what I learned. I used to have issues. The reason I got injured is from overuse. And for me, I thought the more you ran, the better athlete you would become. So what I would just do is I would go to the gym. I used to go to the gym 3 times a week at least. Also run all day, sometimes twice a day. And I thought the more I do this, the stronger I would become. And boy, was I wrong. You can't just keep, pushing your body. And in your book, you always have, I think every 3 weeks, you would cut back a little, but not to the extent where you would have to just do nothing. And I love how you always mention in your rest days that you can do some light training or some strength training or cross training. And so I found that balance really worked for me. And I think you have it down. You've been doing this for so many years. Obviously, you know what you're talking about, and you're as a coach and author and also marathoner, I think you're an expert on this. And I know so many athletes in their 40s. I know some people will say, running is bad for you or bad for your knees, but there are so many strong runners who have shown, people in their 40s, who have shown that you can become a stronger athlete mentally and physically as you age versus the other way around. So that to me is amazing.
I would add the word durability. So I love that where word. I might not get as injured as I didn't. Luckily, I was not I didn't deal with a lot of injuries through my career, which I feel very thankful for, and, give credit to biomechanics, give credit to strategy or how I went about it. I think all pieces play forward. What I've noticed is while I might not recover as fast, or I might not be able to do as big of miles as consistently or whatever those things are, I am more durable. And I think the lessons of nutrition being a big part of that, as well as like consistent time on feet without injury. So I would rather, especially when I'm like coaching clients, I would rather somebody run 5 days a week, less mileage, than plug in a ton of mileage in 2 days over the weekend and then sit at a desk for 5 days. So just, and then over time, having that play out, as opposed to somebody like running hard for a month, hard being high mileage, and then getting an injury and having to sit for 3 weeks and then trying to do it again. I would rather you run less miles in 7 weeks, but be consistent over those 7 weeks, than have that kind of surge and recline, like detraction from being able to stay healthy and training. So then extrapolate that out over 2 decades. That's where that durable word comes in.
That's a great way to put it. I love that. I note to our listeners, this is coming from Chrissy, who did the Grand Slam of running amongst all her hundreds of other ultras. And what the Grand Slam is, can you tell us about what that is? It's at least, I believe, 400 miler races within a short period of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you go back in the sport, the Grand Slam was one of the early challenges of ultra distance running, and it was the and it still is the four oldest 100 milers. So established Western States, Vermont, Leadville, and Wasatch. There was the option to do Old Dominion if you couldn't do, I think Vermont was the one that could opt out. But the four races take place in 11 weeks. So it's a pretty strong ask both of travel and recovery to be able to turn around and do a 100 miler essentially every 3 weeks. And I did that at 27 years old, so in 2005, and the goal being to be the youngest female to accomplish the Grand Slam, which I believe I still am. Like, I don't know if any woman has done it younger than 27 years old. So there's a challenge out there to the young ladies, if that appeals to someone.
I think that's amazing. And you were and you not only did you complete all four, you came in fourth for Western States, first for Vermont, second female for Leadville, and third for Wasatch. So you placed really well on top of that too.
It was a fun, like, somebody tried to equate it to like a baseball analogy of running, like hitting all, you know, like first, second, third, fourth, like got all the, hit all the bases or whatever in the four races. Obviously I don't follow baseball, so I'm not getting the analogy right.
But I don't either. I don't really know baseball. I just know running, but I'm amazed at the durability, like you mentioned. How did you recover between all those races when within such a short period of time?
At that time, I could look back at hindsight and see some things I could have done even better. At the time, it was a lot of rest and downtime. It was also the year that David Horton was running the Pacific Crest Trail for speed. And I ended up spending probably more time than I should have. I wouldn't change the experience for anything, but just in terms of more time on feet between Leadville and Wasatch than I should have. And so Wasatch was a really painful race. I dealt with a lot of patella tendon pain and kind of had to march that one in. It wasn't as great of an experience because I was hadn't recovered as much between. The other thing I would say in hindsight that I would add to recovery is back to that same statement of being more consistent. So I just took a lot of time off in between the races. And I think maybe what have been better is just like 2 or 3 miles a day, but just really minimal, but kept my body moving in between as opposed to just like on the couch downtime. I feel like that would, if I were to go for that again, I might have a little bit different tactic in terms of movement and mobility and focusing on some strength work between and those kind of things, as opposed to complete time off with this. At that time, I just had the mentality of I have to like store up as much energy as possible to be ready to go for the next one.
Yeah, you mentioned mobility a lot. So is that something that you feel is important to longevity? Like you said, you keep moving your body regardless of whether it's strength training, yoga, running. Like, how do you keep moving? I guess keeping your body moving so it's not, like you said, doing nothing for a long period of time and then all of a sudden moving.
That old saying, if you don't use it, you lose it. So just keeping my body in a in a way that a lot, like if I have days where I'm like, you know, it's like I struggle to get out of the car because my legs are tight or hip flexors are flaring up or something like that, that's a pretty good indicator that I'm not doing enough mobility work to complement
Yeah.
the miles that I'm putting in. So it becomes even more important as the mileage goes up. I haven't raced a lot in the last 4 years. That Gaoligong 165 kilometer race in China was the last like big race I went for and like really competitively made an effort at. And
Yeah.
I got back in and ran Tiger Claw this fall and found so much joy and just loved getting to be back on a starting line and amongst the community. And I'm really curious to see how racing changes. But what I've noticed is in those 4 years, I've maintained anywhere from 30 to 50 miles a week. And that, you know, that plus like a weekly yoga and a couple of strength training sessions is a great level of like using and mobility work to keep me balanced as I've increased mileage to get ready for like that fall event. And then I'm looking at doing Miwok this spring. I noticed that like the in adding miles, I have to also find the time for a little bit extra mobility, foam rolling, body self-care to balance out with the increased mileage.
Okay, thank you. I think you answered my question there. I was going to say, how do you deal, how do you prevent injuries as someone who's run as many miles as you have, or for anyone who wants to become an ultra marathoner? How do you, how, I'm not sure about avoiding injury, but how do you stay as injury prone as much as possible?
I think the big thing
Oh,
is
not
the
injury prone,
recovery.
but injury
Yeah, the
resistant.
opposite. Yeah,
The wrong word.
resistant. That's a good word.
Yeah.
Yeah, is the recovery like just that balance, making sure that it's not all out, that you're replenishing energy and like the physical bit as well, whether that's through food, downtime, intentional rest, body work, massage, whatever like works for you to put energy back
Yeah.
in to the body.
Do you feel
What
like
was one more
following a
thing?
training plan or having a coach helps? Because for me, I used to be very injury prone and I had bad tendonitis in my ankle. And the year I did my 50, it was the strongest running year I ever had on the road. I do both trails and I also run on a road. And it was the strongest running year I ever had because I was not injured. And that's for me, it was just having a solid plan of both running and rest, a balance, and knowing how to, like you said, how to recover, how to eat properly, and not just running until you can't run anymore, basically.
Yeah, I think it's super important and or can be very helpful. So if you can provide that yourself by like creating a plan that you follow, but then
Yeah.
also having the grace to be flexible with what life throws at you. And I think that's like when somebody calls me and make, you know, says, "Well, you have a book, why should I hire you as a coach?" I'm like, "If you can follow the book, great. I'm here." Like the difference I think that a coach offers is that like overarching view of your personal life and how life and running and everything fits together. And sometimes it feels a little overwhelming to try and do that on your own and have that perspective to be like, you know what? I need a day off. And, you know, I just need somebody else to tell me it's okay. Or, hey, I'm feeling really good. Like, hey, coach, do you think it's okay at this point to push a few more miles? Then that sounding board can be a real gift. And I've found the more clients that I take on, the less ability I have to write my own training plan. So I've reached out to David Roach and he's written a pretty basic plan, but just something for me to follow so that I take that question out of my own mind of what I should be doing because I'm doing it for so many other people. It's like the plumber that doesn't fix their own pipes. I won't write my own schedule at this point because I am doing that for so many other people. So I just to give the value to what it is to have somebody else have eyes on your life and running to really help that be a long-term sustainable piece. And I tell my clients in our first call that I might say that this race isn't the right timing. And you can push back and tell me why you think it is, and we can have a great conversation about it. But like I'll have all the conversations. I'm not just going to say go, 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 go. Like if things are flowing and that feels good, I'm your biggest cheerleader. And if life is just making it really hard to keep your training up or vice versa, like your training's impacting life and that's not going to be sustainable. Those are the conversations I want to have with people.
Oh, I love that so much. I didn't know that you had a coach, and I didn't know it was David Roach. Like, do you think that someone who has accomplished as much as you have, even you still want some sort of guidance from someone else, or just someone to lay it out for you, I guess, like you said?
The funny part, it's been since I have not been competitive. I just did all my own training for the first 2 decades, and it's just been in the last 2 years that, and I haven't raced in those 2 years, but I have such a commitment to daily movement and running. It's nice to have somebody else say, you know, like, this is a good manageable amount of mileage. Like I have that capacity to go spend 8 hours in the mountains if my life allows for time. But to have somebody say, you know, you don't really need to be doing that right now. Like, it's helpful.
Oh, I love that so much. Okay, that's a really good tip. And down the road, I was thinking, maybe, I love your book, and it was a great tool to use for my first ultra, and I probably would use it for my next race, which I'm still debating what it will be. But just to know that there's another step you can take if you, like you said, life can be very challenging with your commitments, and it could be work or life, and it's nice to have someone to talk to about your training. So I like that a lot. So that's a good tip. So in terms of this year, do you have any, you mentioned you have some races scheduled that you hope to race, or?
Yeah, I'm just looking to see what racing in this 44-year-old body is like. You know, having had a mental break from how I used to compete, I think that time is now, I can see it as a huge gift to kind of set a new approach and just see what happens, as opposed to being clouded by expectation. It's my own, right? There might be expectation for the community, but having that time and space between allows, like, it just to be what it is. And it's like having that experience at Tiger Claw last fall, and just such joy being out there amongst a group of people challenging our bodies and seeing what that course we could do, running on that course. I'm really excited to see what that feels like again at a longer distance and on a course, although I think the course has changed. I ran Miwok a couple of times when I was in the previous decades, and I think it's a little different now, but to be back in like a familiar environment and see what's different.
Yeah. So what do you like?
And then I also have plans to hike a section of the Arizona Trail. So fast packing has made its way into my heart. I did the West Highland Way, which is a 100-mile trail that runs north south through Scotland, which is where my maternal side of my family is from. So I got to go do a 5-day, we did it in 4.5 days. So some pretty big days and some pretty nasty weather, but being able to carry just what I need and have like some little bit of luxuries along the way of huts and hot cooked meals at little cabins and stuff along the way was such a special experience. So my dear friend Kathleen Egan and I are doing, I think, a 10-day section on the AZT in the middle of April. And so that'll be somehow worked into training for Miwok, but I want to do it. So we'll make it happen. Yeah.
Well, that sounds like so much fun to travel again and to race again. And I've never tried fast packing before. Can you tell our listeners about what that is in a short, brief way?
Yeah, it's probably like the quickest description would be a combo of trail running and backpacking. So a lot of times when you picture a trail runner, it's like this tiny little pack and covering miles and sleeping in your own bed, where backpacking, typically you picture somebody with a pretty big pack, moving slowly, multiple days out, carrying everything you need on your back. So the combo of those two is really lightening up your load and carrying just the gear that you need, not any extras. You're not bringing puzzles or journals or any luxuries. You're bringing the basics, and there's a whole community around it that's really specialized gear, tents that weigh less than 2 pounds, or even actually the tent I have is just, I think it's just at a pound, sleeping pads and stuff. Yeah. So just figuring out some of those specifics and then just committing the day to moving, as opposed to, and I haven't done a lot of backpacking, so I might be speaking out of turn, but my vision of what backpacking is like getting to a spot, setting up camp, having time there, and then, you know, doing the next, the same thing the next day. Or fast packing is more about waking up, moving all day, setting up a tiny camp, eating some food, eating as you move, not stopping for meals as much, and then like sleeping and then doing it all again. So just like a little like a blend of those two is how I picture it.
Oh, thank you for that description. I always wondered, I know it involves carrying everything on you, and I'm intrigued, like you mentioned, about the weight. Like, how do you run and carry everything you need to camp on your back, including your food, I guess? Do you carry everything that you eat on you as well?
And the cool things about some of these like long trails that are more populated, like the Arizona Trail, is there's communities that you go through, so you can resupply along the way, whether it's through mailing boxes to yourself ahead of time or just using the local resources. Like Kathleen, the friend that I'm talking about, and her husband did the Pacific Northwest Trail, and there was some stops along the way where they refueled from, like they bought food from like a gas station. So like they, for 3 days, they were dependent on whatever they could purchase and carry from a gas station. So sometimes your food options aren't what you would have if you were home, but that's all part of the journey. Yep.
That sounds so neat. I guess it's kind of like a spontaneous way to enjoy life and seek out new adventures with your friends. Someone that you would obviously trust, really. You're spending that much time with them. So it has to be someone that you really like.
Well, and learn about each, being open to learning about each other while you're out there.
Oh, that's so neat. Okay, that's something that I need to do some research on. And I do have one question I meant to ask you. I remember in 2018 when you came to talk to us about Kentech, the next month you were going to be running CIM, but not as someone racing by themselves. You were going to be a guide. Can you tell us about how that turned out? I'm curious because I remember you telling us about that.
It was amazing experience, and I'm still really good friends with Kyle Robidoux, the runner that I got to run with as a guide. Kyle's vision is, he explained it like he's looking through a toilet paper tube or a paper towel tube. So his periphery vision is very limited. And so he's able to see like long, long distance, but in a limited range. So to run along a trail or a road, it really helps him to have a guide along. And there are runners with varying degrees of sight. So to be a guide for a runner that has like sight vision limitations or whatever is like providing that piece to their running. And what I found is I was like verbally tired after, because running, I ran the first half marathon with him, and calling out where there were speed bumps, or if the road was smooth enough, I could, you know, read some of the signs to him, or I'd say, you know, put out your left hand and somebody could give him a high five, or like just really taking in the experience and then also communicating it to someone so that he could have that much more, like he could get a little bit more out of the experience by me providing sight verbally through it to him. And such a cool cat. I got the opportunity to go to Western States with him. He ended up timing out before I got to pace him, but just to be along for his journey to tackle that, I still feel really honored. We've trying to get him out for Chuckanut, and he's been a really good advocate for this, the community that would want to run with guides. And so if there is somebody that wants to run Chuckanut with a guide, we would work that into our permit so that we have enough, you know, we have spots that were allowed. So we would prioritize that to make that possible. So yeah, definitely a very cool experience that like tenfold went forward into a lot of other things.
I'm so glad you told me about that in 2018, and thank you for the update. And
for asking about it. Yeah.
That's so amazing because I never heard of that before. I didn't know that you can have a guide when you're running, and obviously it makes a huge difference to the community to be able to give back, and that's one way to do it. And it sounds so rewarding and interesting. Like, I never thought that you had to tell someone like to put your hand out to get a high five or, you know, read out the sign. So that's a whole different challenge. To run a marathon by yourself is one thing, but to actually be someone's eyes, that's so cool.
It was really cool. And just to describe it a little bit more, there's a tether, so a piece of webbing between you, so you each hang on to it, and that also and you can kind of push forearms against each other to provide a little bit of like physical awareness. Like if I needed to turn him really quick, we could do it through that. If like if I didn't have enough time to speak the words, I could physically we could have that contact to also help. It was
Oh, there's so much
really.
responsibility.
Oh,
Like
and
to
well,
make
and
sure
just
that
a
you're
really cool
safe.
connection. Yeah, it's a really amazing way to connect with someone.
Oh, I love that. Okay, thank you. I think many listeners have never heard of it as well. So that's a really good way to, I guess, thanks for telling everyone about that. And ever since 2018, I was wondering because I remember you telling us about that. So thank you.
Welcome.
So,
The organization that pairs sighted guides with runners that are blind is called United in Stride. And so you
United.
can go on to that website, and Kyle is actually very, very much involved in the website, and linking up people so that if there's someone in your local community that needs a guide, because you can imagine not only just for the
Yeah.
race, but for all the training miles. So if there's
So
someone locally
true.
that's training for a race that needs a guide, you can train together and then also meet up and help at races
Oh.
as well. So that's a
Oh, good
really cool
point.
resource for that.
Oh, thank you, Chrissy. I wrote that down. I'm going to include that in the show notes. So
Oh,
if
great.
any of our listeners would like to consider that or look into it, that's something that I might consider in the future as well. I really love that. It's a great way to give back and still enjoy the sport of running and share it with someone. So thank you. And I do want to include in the show notes as well, but if you can you tell our listeners how they can find you and also buy your book?
Oh, thanks for that. If you know how to spell my name, you can find me. Thankfully, my last name is rather or somewhat unique. MOEHL, and it's pronounced mail like mailbox, and first name is Chrissy, Krissy. So
I
yeah, so all of
got
my Instagram, Facebook, my website is that. So yeah, if you can spell my name, you'll find me. And then the book, I have a Linktree site, so there's 10 different, at least 10 different retailers listed on there of where to buy the book. And
Okay.
right now it's for pre-order. And if you send me your receipt, I will send you a signed book plate as a thank you. And then I've also made some of those worksheets that I described earlier in the podcast available on my website. So I'll send what's called, like, I guess it's passcode protected, but if you've pre-ordered the book, I'll send you the code to be able to access those worksheets so you can have access to a little bit of early content before the book actually arrives.
Oh, thank you. I'll include those links in my show notes. So if anyone's looking for those links, if you didn't catch that, I'll include that so people can find you. And that's exciting. So I'm looking forward to hopefully doing check-in at maybe next year. And I hope I can get a copy of your book. I really loved the first one. It's still really dear to me, the book that I have, and I plan on using it again. And I recommend it to basically anyone who wants to try something different, whether it's trail running or just following a training plan. It was a really good way for me to learn how to run properly. So thank you.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. It's getting to hear from people of how the running plans and some of the text has influenced and helped them get to their finish lines is like the biggest gift. Like I had no idea when I was writing a book how that would come back like more than tenfold. It's just like last night I had a person in our community hand me a handwritten note thanking me for the book. It helped him run a 100 miler in under 24 hours, his first 100 miler. So just getting those notes from people, whether it's a message on Instagram or a direct email or talking to you and hearing your experience, that's like the big gift for me coming back at this, having put that energy into publishing the book and now a second edition and putting it out into the world.
Well, you have helped me so much, and I'm sure you have helped many others. And I'm excited that you're coming out with your second edition. And thank you so much for coming onto my podcast and talking to me. I feel so honored that you came on here today. And it's nice chatting with you.
Nice chatting with you too, and I hope we can have another, whether it's down here at Chuckanut or come up to Kintec. But it's awesome that all these podcasts are coming available and creating awesome content and accessibility to a sport that didn't really have that so many years ago.
Yeah, like you mentioned, we didn't have any of this 20 years ago. So I think it's life changing. It truly is. So I feel so fortunate. So thank you so
Yeah,
much,
however people
Christine.
find it. Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
And all the best for everything that's coming up. So
Likewise, you as well. Yeah, have you shared with your listeners what your goals are this summer or this year?
well, I'm back to road races for now. It's been hard training in the trails because just the way things were with the pandemic and having company to train with where I live. But I hope to get back into the trails. And I really do want to run another. Unfortunately, I only run one ultra, which is Chuckanut. I would love to do Chuckanut again. And if not, some other trail races and longer distances. My heart's with the long distance running. So definitely, I don't know if I can do a 100 miler yet, but I guess 50 miles would be my next, I guess the next step, I guess. Or
Okay.
maybe another 50K. I
Cool.
don't know. I don't know. It takes time to build that, like you said, consistency. And I'm just getting back into it. Like I kept consistent throughout the last 2 years, even about races, but it's just building that confidence again and durability, like you said, because I'm now 40, 42, almost 42. And it's a lot more challenging, like you said, with recovery and just staying injury free. So that's my goal.
Got it. Yeah, the long-term goal with it, just keeping
Yeah.
connected.
So we'll see how
Cool.
that goes. Thank you guys for listening to this episode. I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I did. Chrissy is truly such a humble, kind, and joyful person, and it felt like I was chatting with an old friend. It was truly a pleasure to share this episode with you guys. I'm so excited for Chrissy and the second edition of her book. Like I said, the first edition of Running Your First Ultra was instrumental in my training for my first ultra marathon, and it changed the way I approach training as a road and trail runner. I hope to see Chrissy at Chuckanut 50 or perhaps another Kintec Trail Clinic talk in the future. If you would like to follow Chrissy or purchase an autographed book, the links are included in the show notes. If you enjoyed this episode, I would love for you to give it a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or Spotify and follow the iHeartRunning podcast so you don't miss the next episode. Thank you and happy running.